Excellent, excellent, excellent. Well, as you walked in this morning, you have walked into a really fun Sunday here at Hoboken Grace, and you probably noticed there's some things happening around the room. For those of you who are with us for the first time, let me just introduce myself. My name is Chris. I'm the lead pastor here at Hoboken Grace, and for a couple weeks here, we're just celebrating family, and last week, we celebrated family in this really beautiful way because we had families throughout our services that were dedicating their children, and we got to be a part of that special moment in their lives, and not just have them make these commitments before us, but then also to be able to make commitments back to them, and looking at, okay, what does it look like for us to do and to work towards being what we need to be for these little ones to grow up in a healthy environment where they can experience and know Christ's love and his message. And then this week, we come together, and we're celebrating family in a little bit of a different way. I think just as exciting, though, and we're looking at this idea of family. And usually when we talk about family, we usually think small. So if I were to ask you about your family, you'd probably tell me about your brothers, or you'd tell me about your kids, or you'd tell me about your parents. Or it's usually a small group of people. Now, your culture may influence that a little bit. When I say family, I'm thinking really small. When my wife says family, she's from Ecuador, so it's a little bigger. And so it's a little culturally influenced, but in light of the whole, it's still usually very small. And what I want to do today is I want to step into a story where I think, because I think that when it comes to family, I think it's one of these things in our lives where God is trying to step into our story and reshape how we think. Where he's trying to shake up a little bit our idea of what this means and what this looks like, or what this should look like, or what this could look like. And when you read through the New Testament, specifically if you read through it, looking at this idea of family, there's some really interesting ideas in there. As a matter of fact, if you want to do a really interesting study, study what Jesus Christ has to say about family. He says some really intriguing things, some things that are almost confusing at times. But even as you continue from there, throughout the New Testament, God's doing something with this idea of family. And he's trying to shake up a little bit what we think of and how we look at or interact with family. I want to take you to a passage where you see him doing this in the life of Peter in particular. In Acts chapter 10, and this is where we're going to pick up. This is where we're going to pick up the story. God begins to do this in the life of Peter. He begins to shake this thing up as far as family, this group of people that we're supposed to care for, right? This group of people that when I say family, we think, okay, this is the people that I'm supposed to care for. These are the people that I love, or these are the people that I take responsibility for, or these are the people that in some way, shape, or form matter to me, or they're supposed to matter to me. They don't always matter to me, but they're supposed to matter to me, right? And Jesus is stepping into Peter's life, and in this moment, he's radically shaking up his idea of family. And as we walk into today and we celebrate family, and as we walk through this morning and we look at the opportunities that God has around us, I want to take us to this passage and just allow God to maybe shake up our idea of family a little bit as well. In Acts chapter 10, verse 1, the passage starts off, and we see that it begins with the story of a Roman officer. So beginning in verse 1, it says, "In Caesarea there lived a Roman army officer named Cornelius, who was a captain of the Italian regiment. He was a devout, God-fearing man, who, as was everyone in his household. He gave generously to the poor and prayed regularly to God. One afternoon, about 3 o'clock, he had a vision in which he saw an angel of God coming towards him." So the story begins, and we see the setting, and the setting is of this individual named Cornelius. He's a Roman officer. But as a Roman officer, he's unique in that he believes in God, he's trusted God, he's working to follow God. And as the story unfolds, the story is very clear to kind of give us his background and to make it very clear to us that this individual is someone who is pursuing God. But even as it talks about him, the way that it talks about him, it reveals something to us about the background of the story that's really important for us to know. Because look at how it mentions him. It says that he's a God-fearing man. Well, the reason that it does this is because if you look at the Old Testament, you see that God, as he begins to move in our story, he comes to a family. He comes to a family and he says, here's the deal. I'm going to use your family. And the family is what becomes the nation of Israel, but it's a family. And he comes to Abraham. He says, I'm going to use your family to change the world. He says, I'm going to use your family to show the world who I am. I'm going to use your family to allow the world to see my power and my provision and my love. And I'm going to use your family in this really amazing way. And so what I want you to, and then he begins to tell them, so this is how I want you to operate as a family. I want you to do certain things. I want you to not do certain things. I want you to be careful with how you interact with people who are outside of the family, not to marry outside of the family. And there's a lot of different things that he's walking them through as far as how they're going to be this family that demonstrates the beauty and the love of God to the world around them. This is why when you look at this passage, this is why it refers to him this way, because people who were not part of the family, but who followed God, who believed in God, they were referred to as God-fearing individuals. And so they weren't Jews, but at the same time, they were on this journey of pursuing God and trusting God and following God. And so from the very beginning of the story, you see that it's pointing out that there's even though he's following God to an extent, he's still an outsider. He's still an outsider. And as he's pursuing God, as the story begins to lay out, all of a sudden, he begins to have this vision, and an angel of God is coming towards him. And Cornelius, the angel says, Cornelius stared at him in terror, which is what happens when you see an angel. It says, what is it, sir? He asked the angel. And the angel replied, your prayers and gifts to the poor have been received by God as an offering. Now send some men to Joppa and summon a man named Simon Peter. He is staying with Simon, a tanner who lives near the seashore. He says, listen, God knows what's been happening. God knows how you've been pursuing him. God knows how you've been working to love him and love those around you. And so here's the deal. You need to send someone to find this guy named Simon Peter. It says, as soon as the angel was gone, Cornelius called two of his household servants and a devout soldier, one of his personal attendants. He told them what had happened and sent them off to Joppa. And so God steps into his story. He says, listen, I know what's been happening in your life. You need to go find this guy, Simon Peter. So he sends these guys out to do that. At the same time, God's beginning to do something in Peter's life. It says, the next day, as Cornelius' messengers were nearing the town, Peter went up on the flat roof to pray. It was about noon, and he was hungry. But while a meal was being prepared, he fell into a trance. He saw the sky open and something like a large sheet was let down by its four corners. In the sheet were all sorts of animals, reptiles, and birds. Then a voice said to him, get up, Peter, kill and eat. And so as these messengers are on their way to find Peter, Peter goes up on the roof to pray himself. And as he's praying, all of a sudden he begins to have this dream. And in this dream, there's this sheet that's being lowered down to him. And in this sheet, there's all sorts of animals, but specifically animals that his family wasn't allowed to eat. And as God was developing this family, as God was instructing this family, one of the things that he told them, and a lot of it had to do with health reasons at that time and in that culture, and he says, listen, here's what I want you to do. I want you to make sure that you don't eat these things. Right? He even talks to them about how to eat certain things, but he says, in particular, I want you to make sure that you don't eat these animals. And so as this thing is being lowered down, Peter looks up and the sheet is filled with things that his family is not supposed to eat. But then he hears this voice, and this voice says, listen, I want you to get up, kill, and eat these things. Listen to what Peter says. It says, no, Lord, Peter declared, I've never eaten anything that our Jewish laws have declared impure and unclean. Peter says, no, I'm not allowed to. My family's not allowed to eat those things, and you know that I've never done that. It's interesting as it continues. It says, but the voice spoke again, do not call something unclean if God has made it clean. The same vision was repeated three times. Then the sheet was suddenly pulled up to heaven. I think this is God's this is like the subtle message to Peter that this is me. So how many times does he do it? Three times. This is God's special number with Peter. Three times. Three times Peter denies Jesus. Three times Jesus asks Peter, "Do you love me, Peter?" This is God's just subtle way of saying, "Peter, just in case you think that this is coming from someone else, just in case you think this happened because you were really hungry," right? He said, "Just in case you think this is in some way, shape, or form not coming from me, I'm going to do it three times just to reassure you it's me." Because you and I know three's our special number. And so God, in this really subtle way, he's stepping in Peter's life and saying, listen, I want to change something. And the truth is that Jesus has been trying to open his disciples' eyes to what he's trying to communicate to Peter here for a long time. For a long time, he's been trying to teach them this, but his disciples are struggling to understand it. Peter, in particular, is struggling to understand it. Even coming out of this, he's confused. He doesn't get it. He's like, what in the world is going on? It says, Peter was very perplexed. What could the vision mean? Just then, the men sent by Cornelius found Simon's house, standing outside the gate. And I love this about this passage. It says, they asked if a man named Simon Peter was staying there. They're not really confident in this. They're like, okay, our boss is crazy. He said he had a dream. He sent us to find this guy. He said he was going to be staying here. I know we sound like idiots, but is there a guy named Simon Peter staying here? Yeah, you can tell they're a little hesitant. What's actually happened? But they go and they ask, and clearly he is. He says, meanwhile, as Peter was puzzling over the vision, the Holy Spirit said to him, three men have come looking for you. Get up, go downstairs, and go with them without hesitation. Don't worry, for I have sent them. So Peter went down and said, I'm the man you're looking for. Why have you come? They said, we were sent by Cornelius, a Roman officer. He's a devout and God-fearing man, well-respected by all the Jews. A holy angel instructed him to summon you to his house, so that he can hear your message. I wonder how they said that. I wonder if they said it with confidence or if they're like, he said that a holy angel told, but either way, they tell him, right? This is why we're here. This is why he sent me. And they are aware, don't miss this. They're aware of something that Peter's going to bring up in a little bit. Okay? They're very aware of what they're asking of Peter, because what they're asking of Peter is not a small thing. It says, so Peter invited the men to stay for the night. The next day he went with them, accompanied by some of the brothers from Joppa. They arrived in Caesarea the following day. Cornelius was waiting for them and had called together his relatives and close friends. So he's invited everybody that he could to be a part of this. As Peter entered his home, Cornelius fell at his feet and worshipped him. But Peter pulled him up and said, stand up, I'm a human being just like you. So they talked together and went inside, where many others were assembled. Peter told them, now this is what they knew when they asked Peter this, right? Peter told them, you know it is against our Jewish laws for a Jewish man to enter a Gentile home like this or to associate with you. He says, you know in our family we're not allowed to do this. And when you look at what's happened between the Old Testament and the New Testament, there are all these rules that have begun to develop, not necessarily just what God had instructed the family to do, but then also all these other things around it. And as Peter steps in, he says, you know that in my family, we're not allowed to do this. I'm not allowed to be here. And when they asked Peter, they knew this as well. This was not an unknown thing. But Peter says, I don't know what's going on. I don't know what this whole thing was about. I don't know why God spoke to you. I don't know why I'm here. He says, you know that this is, you know, as far as our family is concerned, this isn't supposed to happen. He says, but God has shown me that I should no longer think of anyone as impure or unclean. So I came without objection as soon as I was sent for. Now tell me why you sent for me. Cornelius replied, 4 days ago, I was praying in my house. And Cornelius begins to tell him this story. Just a couple of verses later, it says, then Peter replied, I see very clearly that God shows no favoritism. In every nation, he accepts those who fear him and do what is right. This is the message of good news for the people of Israel, that there is peace with God through Jesus Christ, who is Lord of all. And he begins to share with them the message of Jesus.
And as you walk through the story, it's so beautiful because not only do you see Cornelius come to know Christ, not only do you see him experience the beauty of how Christ gave his life for him, but then his whole household, there's literally tons of people who come to know Christ that day. And as you watch Peter throughout the story, if you have your program, hobocongrace.info, we have all of the passages there. You can read through the whole story if you'd like. We don't have time to do it this morning. But as you read through the story, it's interesting because even as the story progresses, Peter's surprised all along the way. He's surprised that God calls him there. He's surprised. He's surprised when he hears Cornelius' story of what God's doing and how he was sent for. And then even as you see Cornelius step into this relationship with Christ, it says that he experiences the Holy Spirit the same way that the new believers did at the beginning of Acts. And Peter's watching that. And he's surprised. He's like, I can't believe what's happening. I can't believe what's happening. You know that to be true because when he goes back to Jerusalem, they actually criticize him. They're like, what are you doing? In our family, you're not supposed to do this. This is about family. This is about our family. And he says, but you have to hear what happened. You have to hear what happened and what God did and how God, and he talks about how they received the Holy Spirit. And then as throughout the entire story, you see, playing out in their lives, something that Jesus has been trying to teach them the whole time. Something that Jesus has been trying to call them to the whole time. That this mission isn't about a small family. It's about a big family. That this mission is not about a limited family, but about an expanding family. And Jesus had been trying to teach them that. When you go back to the Good Samaritan, the whole story is about expanding. He's talking to this lawyer, and this lawyer asks him, who is my neighbor? And this wasn't a small question. Just so you know, you may think, well, that's just kind of a question that came off the top of his head. It's actually not. In Jewish history, this is one of the most debated questions: is who is my neighbor? Because God had said you need to love your neighbor as yourself, and so there's a huge debate on who is your neighbor and how close do they have to be or how related do they have to be and who qualifies and who doesn't qualify and does their ability to be able to keep the rules have an impact on whether or not they're your neighbor or not your neighbor. And so this was a huge question that he asked Jesus, and Jesus goes into a story, and the whole story is about, guys, you're looking at this word neighbor and you're using it to limit. But to me, it's not a limiting word. It's an expanding word. He's like, and so he chooses the most despised person, their enemy, and he says, this is your neighbor. Why are you guys using this word to make it small? Why are you guys using this word to limit? This should be a word that should expand. It's always ever expanding. And I think when you look at what God's doing in Peter's life in this moment, is he's saying, Peter, I've been trying to teach you this. I've been trying to show you this. When Jesus Christ gives his life on that cross, he takes that idea of family and he just blows it up. He says it's not going to be about a small family. It's going to be about a huge family. And Peter, you're thinking limited and you're thinking small. So, but you got to expand your family, your idea of family. You've got to expand the whole way you think about this. I didn't come to limit this. I came to expand this. And as we watch him shake up Peter's idea of family, I think it's a story, it's a passage, and it's something that we see God doing over and over again, where he's stepping in and he's saying, you've got to expand your idea of family. You've got to stop looking at something as limiting. You've got to stop looking at the idea of being human as being related to a few, as being connected to or loving or caring about a few, and start understanding that how I created you to be human was to be related to and to care for all. It's not about these little families. It's about family. It's something that God has been trying to tell us. It's something that he's demonstrated so beautifully to us. I mean, that is our story. If you've stepped into a relationship with God, that's your story. It's a story of a God who wasn't satisfied with a small family. And so he gave his son to expand the family. And Jesus Christ goes to that cross and he gives his life on that cross so that he can be adopted by you and can be adopted so that he can adopt you and he can adopt me so that he can expand the family. And as we look around this room today and as you look at the different tables and you look at all of the different opportunities that we have to be able to go around the world, I was sitting and just thinking through this and processing this with God last week. There are all sorts of different things happening around the room here. And we've got tables that feature all the different places that we're going to go in the world this year. And I got it right last service, so I'm going to try it again this service, okay? We've got Kenya over here. We've got Guatemala over here. We've got Cambodia over here. We've got South Korea over here. We've got Mexico over here. And we've got Sierra Leone over here. And these are the different places that we're going to go throughout the world. But as I was thinking about this last week, and as I was praying through this, and just preparing for this morning, I began to ask myself, like, what would happen in my life if I expanded the family? Like, what would I do? When you look at the South Korea flag over here, we work with an organization called Link. Link helps individuals who've escaped from North Korea into China where they have no rights. They can't get a job. If they get caught, if they find out where they're from, they'll be sent back to North Korea and they'll be put into a prison camp. And so they help them to be able to escape China and to be able to relocate in South Korea or the United States. It's an organization that literally saves people's lives. And you look at a situation like that, and I think to myself, like, what would I do? What would I do if my brother was trapped in China in that situation? What would I do if Steve was there? When you look at Guatemala, in Guatemala we go in and we build homes. There's a whole group of people who just live on a dump. They live there. They collect. They just try to make money from the trash that's being dumped there. And we go in, and rather than them having to live in homes that they construct out of the trash, we actually just go in and build really simple homes. It's life-changing for families. We do it every year. What would I do if my son was living there? To what extent would I go? To change the story. What would I do if I stopped thinking about family as small? And I started to look at family the way that Jesus looks at family. To expand your family. I love hearing Ben and Amy Gress talk about the kids in Mexico. Ben and Amy have been working with the orphanage that we work with for years and years and years. Long before they came here to Hoboken Grace, they used to go with another church to go down to Mexico and work with this orphanage. And when they came here, one of the first things that they did is they came to us and said, listen, if you'll let us, we would love to be able to lead a trip of people down here to Mexico and to be able to work with these kids. And the reason why I love listening to them talk about it is because they don't talk about an organization that they work with. They talk about their kids that they've now watched grow up.
And when they first came, and this past year was a really special year for them, because some of the kids who were just babies when they first started working with the orphanage have now graduated, and they're getting their own jobs, and they're watching them establish their lives. And Ben and Amy talk about it. They're like, when you look back at it, you didn't think there was any hope for them. You didn't think that they'd ever make it. You didn't think that they'd ever be able to be where they are today. When they talk about it, it's not just an idea, it's not just an organization, it's their family. As God steps into your life and my life, one of the things that he wants to do is he wants to shake up our idea of family, to expand it. And we can't change, we're not going to change every story. We can't change every situation. But here's what I believe God's calling us to do. God's calling us to expand the family. To do what he's done for us. To not just be adopted, but to adopt. And as we walk through this morning, and as we look at the different places around the world that you can go, my challenge to you is not to find a trip that you can go on or a place that you can visit. My challenge to you is this: to find a group of people with which you will expand your family. A group of people that you will begin to care for. A group of people that you will begin to take responsibility for. A group of people that you will be passionate about to expand your family the way that Jesus has expanded his family for you. The adopted adopt, and we have been adopted. How will you expand your family?